Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So three, those whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, mayaya apritigyana. The next class of duskriti is called mayaya apritigyana, or those persons whose erudite knowledge has been nullified by the influence of illusory material energy. They are mostly very learned fellows, great philosophers, poets, literati, scientists, etc. But the illusory energy misguides them, and therefore they disobey the Supreme Lord. There are a great number of mayaya pratigyana at the present moment, even amongst the scholars of the Bhagavad Gita. In the Gita, in plain and simple language, it is stated that Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is none equal to or greater than him. He is mentioned as the father of Brahma, the original father of all human beings. In fact, Sri Krishna is said to be not only the father of Brahma, but also the father of all species of life. He is a root of the impersonal Brahman and Paramatma. The supersoul in every entity is his plenary portion. He is the fountainhead of everything, and everyone is advised to surrender unto his lotus feet. Despite all these clear statements, the mayaya pratigyana deride the personality of the Supreme Lord and consider him merely another human being. They do not know that the blessed form of human life is designed after the eternal and transcendental feature of the Supreme Lord. All the unauthorized interpretations of the Gita by the class of mayaya pratigyana outside the purview of the parampara system are so many stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual understanding. The deluded interpreters do not surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, nor do they teach others to follow the principle. Right? So, basically, those who are very intelligent, you know, very studious, scholarly, but their knowledge doesn't result or end in understanding the Supreme Lord, you know, and especially those that take them away from that, then these are the mayaya pratigyana, right? They're very intelligent, you know, generally speaking, but the problem is they get distracted by the material energy. So the conclusion is not that Krishna is God and they should surrender. So this is the point. These four persons don't surrender. That's how you define them. The ones that do define, then that's a different definition. But these are, they don't surrender. That's the point. Right? So, yeah. So the mudhas, they're just in ignorance, so they don't even know that there's some concept of surrendering at all. They just think their material day-to-day life is just all there is. Right? The naradamas, they learn about the actual spiritual, they're not interested. The mayaya pratigyanas, they're dealing in the knowledge that could bring to that, but they don't actually understand its devotional nature, or they don't understand the Lord, so they don't surrender. Four, those of demoniac principles. Asuram bhavam ashrita. Another class of men who do not surrender to Lord Krishna are the demons, those who are staunchly inimical to him. Famous and powerful demon kings like Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Jarasandha, and Kamsa acquired many mystic powers through learning and severe austerities. But because they always challenged the various incarnations of the Supreme Lord, such as Rama, Lord Nrsingadev, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Krishna, they are known as demons. Often the demons do not lack education or intelligence, but because of their fiendish mentality towards the Supreme Lord, their learning and brain capacity come to naught. Their abilities being fully in the grip of material energy are ultimately taken from them. The reason for the demon's failure has been stated earlier. If one does not surrender to Lord Krishna, it is impossible to surmount the material nature. Right? It's material energy. It's hers. Right? You have some of it. At some point, you have to give it back. It's just the way it works. Right? But if you're doing things in connection with Krishna, then that's never lost. Because Krishna is eternal. That manifestation is eternal. So that will always be there. But the material energy, it's temporary manifestation. So when it's time to go, then it's the way it works. So here we see is they know about Krishna. They know about Vishnu. And they're inimical. Right? So the Naradama, he's just not interested. Right? The demon is then, you know, specifically against. Right? Then there, you see that? So it means you have a more aggressive and less. Then those who have no knowledge and no understanding and just perfectly absorbed in material energy, the mudas, and then those who have knowledge about the material energy and all that, but still don't understand the Supreme Lord. Right? So two basically on the quality of knowledge and two upon their, you know, how you say, perspective on how they view their relationship with the Lord. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan describes the Asura Bhava Ashrita as follows. Quote, under the influence of Maya, others take shelter of the demoniac mentality and propound the theory of an entity which is consciousness itself, without qualities, form, activities, or thoughts. With their arrows, these demons pierce my body, which gives everyone else bliss. Similarly, these persons try to break my body using logic, with statements such as, God has no qualities, even though my body is famous in the scriptures as being eternal and conscious. The manifestation of such intelligence is caused by Maya. Right. So here it's like they're aggressively against. Right? So then we can see is that if they're just illusion, in other words, their knowledge doesn't conclude in the Supreme Lord, then that's Mayaya Pratigyana. But when it's used specifically against the Lord, right? Because it says that much of the time they do not, often the demons don't lack education or intelligence, right? So then there is that element of the Maya Pratigyana, right? But then they're specifically aimed against the Lord, right? They're trying to say the Lord has no form, he has no qualities, or he doesn't exist, or like this. So it's specifically against. Right, you know, atheist means he's against theism. Right, it doesn't stand on its own. Right, means theism it just stands on its own. You know, it's not called anti-atheism. Right, you know, it's theism. So it stands there because there's that element of support of the Lord, while atheism that means it's against the Lord, against theistic understanding. And theistic interpretation. Right, so these demoniac persons, they say all these things against the Lord, and it brings others. They think, oh yes, this is very intelligent, very this, that. So it brings them happiness, but it's very, you know, annoying to the Lord. Right? Because it's not like, you know, he's in everybody's heart, so he's there when they deal with all this stuff. On the other hand, four kinds of persons, pious persons who surrender to Krishna, are stated in verse 16. They are distressed, exemplified, oh, this one thing. In the demons, you see, is that also, just on the universal level, there's two general classes, the daityas and the danavas. So the daityas are generally these, you know, intelligent, educated, you know, so-called cultured, like that. And then they're against the Supreme Lord. While the danavas are generally a little bit more, you know, how you say, down home, you know, how you say, the paisanos of the, you know, demoniac group. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Yeah? Okay. They are the distressed, exemplified by Gajendra, the inquisitive, exemplified by Shaunaka, and one who desires wealth, exemplified by Dhruva Maharaj, and the seeker of knowledge of the Absolute, exemplified by Sukadeva Goswami. According to Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan, the inquisitive, Jigyasur, is placed between the distressed, Arto, and the desire of wealth, Artarti, because the Arto and Artarti must become curious about Krishna consciousness, Jigyasu, in order to make further spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada describes the Jigyasu as follows. He understands that, in other words, the Arta Artarti, then they're approaching the Lord for because of distress or need of wealth. Right? So there's some material disturbance, they want it removed. But now, once they come in contact, that's removed for them to make further advancement, then they have to at least come to that element of Jigyasu where they're interested. What's going on? Why is this? Why does this work? You know, who is this Lord? Like that. Then they'll make further advancement. So he places them in between. Like that. You know, so, but, because then in between, but then the other thing is the, I say, okay. Then that brings them to the jnani. Right? Because the jnani means someone who actually wants to know the Lord. He's not just inquisitive, he wants to know the Lord, right? So between the arta and artarti, then you have the jigyasu. Right? Because they have to come to that to get there. Innocent inquiries are known as jigyasu. Those who are inquisitive. These innocent inquirers are society's hope for the future. Most intelligent and innocent young children are inquisitive. They question their parents about many things and remember the answers. When these bright young boys and girls receive proper guidance from parents and teachers who can lucidly answer their queries, they easily understand each point and gradually develop fine brains. From among these intelligent souls, those who are especially pious begin to keenly inquire about God and other spiritual topics. Others who pursue ignoble material knowledge cannot become successful in life and end up beating the chaff. Right? Understand chaff? Means when you have, let's say you have rice, right? So there's the grain and then there's like the husk. So when you've already husked it and all there is the husk, if you beat that, you won't get any more rice. So these people who have this just, you know, how you say, it says ignoble, ignoble material knowledge. Then that means it's material knowledge that's not connected to the Lord. So as you were saying, there's aparavidya and avidya. It's the same thing. If it's connected to the Lord, connected to paravidya, or transcendental knowledge, then it's called aparavidya. It's not paravidya, but it's connected to it. Right? But avidya means it's not connected to para. So here the ignoble means it has no connection to the Lord. They have all this knowledge, but it doesn't end up in it. So it ends up like mayaya pratigyana. Right? So much knowledge, but from that knowledge they can't see the Supreme Lord. Aparavidya means all these branches of scientific knowledge define the Lord also, because it's all His creation. It's coming from Him. So you're defining the Ayurveda, how it works, but it's still coming from Him. Right? It's still based on the same thing. Medicine, the balance of the mucus, bile, and air. Right? So there's still going to be, mucus is going to be ignorance, bile is going to be passion, and air is going to be goodness. So it's all based on the same thing. Right? So it'll work in the same way, but just it's applied in health. So if you can't see that, that means you haven't understood. Then your knowledge has been stolen. Right? So those who only go after that, pursue that, and say this will make life successful, well, great. But if you don't connect it to Krishna, then life is not so successful. Those who are inquisitive about the self and the absolute truth, Brahman, quickly surrender to Lord Krishna and his devotees. Such surrender proves their good measure of piety brought over from their previous births. Beginning with fundamental inquiries about Brahman, they swiftly become elevated. Understand the statement of Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 14:27, that he is the basis of the impersonal Brahman, and begin to worship him. Right? So by nature, anyway, a little bit intelligent from the youth, they innocently inquire about everything. So now if the teachers properly answer these questions, their parents and teachers, then it cultivates this inquisitive element, and they learn so much. It develops their brain. So that means one is that the inquisitiveness was being dealt with properly, so it's cultivated. But that also means that it's cultivated in connection to the Supreme Lord. Right? So you see what is the material, how it functions, its answer. At the same time, you see its connection to the Lord. So this way, then the acquisitive naturally will progress. And at some point, when all the basic material elements are satisfied, then they're going to be, as maturity comes, more inquisitiveness, more inquisitiveness about the Supreme Lord. You understand? So this also shows that this element of cultivating the aspect of jigyasu, it already starts with the teachers and parents. Like when the kids are small, they ask a million questions. They want to know everything. So you answer that, then it develops their intelligence, right? So many parents, they want their kids to be intelligent in this, but they don't want to answer the questions. So how is that going to work? It's like saying, oh, we want them to be healthy and strong, but you won't feed them. So it's not really going to work. Right? So it's very important, this element of answering the questions, right? It may drive you nuts, but hey, that's what parenthood is for, right? Things were going along and quite boring, so therefore you have children just to, spice things up, right? Okay. The first three categories, Arto, Jigyasu, and Artarti, are Sakama devotees, right? The fourth one, the Jnani, is a Nishkam devotee because he does not have material desires. Okay? And then, according to the note, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, verse 16 describes three types of Kama Misra Bhaktas, Arto, Jigyasu, Artarti, and a Jnana Misra Bhakta, the Jnani. The Jnani is defined as a sannyasi with pure heart who worships the Lord with devotion without material desire. Okay. In this definition, the Jnani does not have a desire for liberation. If he's free from a desire for liberation, then what is the influence of Jnana over him? Right? So in other words, we might say, well, Jnana Misra, but here it means that the Jnana, the knowledge is the element here. So here it's being used in the thing, also Jnana Yoga. So you could say it's, bhakti mixed with the jnana, because that's prominent, that knowledge trying to understand and everything like this. Because devotion technically means it's just the natural flow of affection between the lover and the beloved. You understand? So knowledge isn't part of it. So that means it's mixed with that. Right? Does that make sense? So you have that element on the subtle. So, like this. Because also, Vishwanath also he's the one that defines that bhakti starts at prema. Right? Before that, it's sadhana. Like that. So what Vishwanath points out is a very, very clear, exacting line. So it's exactly where everybody stands. But it's supposed to be taken in an inspirational way. So here when he's saying the Jnana Misra, it's not a problem. It's not taken in a negative connotation, right? Because we can see the environment. But in other connotations, it may be seen as a negative, right? Somebody's too distracted by knowledge, too distracted by idea for liberation. Like that. I mean, it's not so much liberation, just wanting to get out of the material world. Right, you want to go back to Godhead, of course, because that gets you out of the material world. Does that make sense? So you say that it would be the Jnana Misra. So here he's pointing out that there's no karma right? Desire for fruit of results like that. So there's no sakam there. And there's no desire for liberation. So that's free from karma and jnana. So that, then that situation, so where, so it won't be controlled by that. So it'll be progressive. If he's free from desire for liberation, then what is the influence of jnana over them, over him? Although he does not desire liberation, but a relationship with the Lord, he prefers this relationship to be predominated by peace, shantarati. Alright, so that's the element where you can see is the misra aspect. So he's not interested in liberation, but because of the mode of goodness, one doesn't like any difficulty or any problems, any complications. Right? Mode of passion doesn't mind them because you can get your result. But the problem with passion is that they're not exactly necessarily as focused on how they should be on what they're doing. So they take something up with great enthusiasm. But as they start to get their results, they're not thorough. They don't finish the work. So that's also a symptom of passion. Great enthusiasm, you start things but don't really finish them nicely. Right? Well, goodness means then, you know, you'll start it up because it's supposed to be done, and you'll finish it properly because it's supposed to be done. So one doesn't really like any complications like that. So that's the weakness of being situated in goodness. Right? You have to be situated in pure goodness. So therefore you're willing to take trouble for Krishna. But as in goodness, you're focused on the present. You have no desires for the results, so you're not in the future, passion. You're not controlled by the past, ignorance. Right? So then, and it's... Yeah. Thus, the jnani mentioned in verse 16 is not an ordinary jnani impersonalist. Right? That's not... We have to get used to these terms have actual meaning. Then there's how they're used. Right, in general usage. Right? It means, like you have a word that doesn't mean anything wrong, but people use it badly. So it generally takes on that connotation. So the element of jnani technically means one who wants to know the Lord. Right? But then you have the thing is, but they're knowing through knowledge. So if you remove the Lord part, just leave the knowledge, what do you call the guy? Right, because jnana means knowledge, but knowledge is about the Lord. So he's interested in knowledge, but not the Lord. So what are you going to call him? You understand? Because the word means knowledge. So the word stays. But then one has to be able to distinguish between jnani, meaning one who's a devotee interested in the Lord, who's a Naishkarmi Bhakta, and someone who is an impersonalist. Right? Yes. No? Oh, mosquito. Okay. Krishna says, he has a predominance of bhakti, eka bhakti-hi, not like other jnanis who have a predominance of jnana. He has such great attachment for the process of bhakti alone. Oh, he has great attachment for the process of bhakti alone. And is a jnani in name only. I, in the form of Shyamasundara, am exceedingly dear to such a jnani. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on verse 17. Right, so in other words, because it's jnana, misra, bhakti, so the bhakti is predominant, the jnana is less. Right? So generally we would call, in the previous chapters, we would call that jnana yogi. Right? And even if the jnana is predominant, but it's in the pursuance of bhakti, we'd still say jnana yogi. But if you're trying to point out the weakness in it, then you'll use the term jnana, misra, bhakti. Right? So one has to seize, because otherwise sometimes devotees from these terminologies then have a bad concept of the jnana yoga. So they'll call it jnana misra or karma yoga, karma yoga, karma misra. So they're not good. So there can only be, you know, the shuddha bhakti, you know, which is true. But the point is how do you get the shuddha bhakti? Except through karma yoga and jnana yoga. So that means the bhakti is mixed with karma or jnana. But it's being engaged in the Lord's service because it's using karma but you don't want the result for yourself. You're using jnana but you don't want liberation. So then it doesn't have the problem, you know, that is defined by, you know, the obstacles in devotional service. It's just one is not so mature. The faith, the attachment, all these things haven't developed so greatly. Right? So it's just, it's on the process.
So you have to see the context in which it's used. So here we can see as Jnana Misra can be seen in a positive light, or some other charts use it. Jnana Misra means it's seen in a negative. It means, you know, Jnana Misra meaning that it's progressive, where knowledge is being connected to the Lord through devotion. Right? Or it can be seen as what is the part within one's devotional process that is the mix, the material mix that happens to be Jnana. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, you have to be able to, in the process, understand the glass is half full and the glass is half empty. You know what I'm saying? To just always use, well, the glass is half full. You know, that's great, but then you'll never have a full glass. Because you're satisfied with this half full glass. Because you're being all nice and good and seeing the positive. So that's great. But at the same time, as it only has real meaning, it's not sentimental, when you can also understand it's half empty. That means it can be filled, but the point is it's already half filled. So that means we're not starting from zero, we're starting from half, and then getting it to full. Right? So now if you can't figure out which half is empty, how are you going to fill it? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the... Yes.
Sorry, can I ask you a question? There's something a while ago you hit on that was quite important for me. You mentioned about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who said that devotion bhakti starts from prema, from this level. So it's important for us to serve the bhakti yogi. It's vital for us. So we know Srila Prabhupada was on this level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since Srila Prabhupada left, we have to serve his representatives, which is fine. Are we serving those representatives who are serving Srila Prabhupada, like through him, or are any of the people on the prema level that we're serving direct and then to Krishna, so to speak?
The parampara means on the level of, you know, serving Prabhupada as his associates, then you're going to have the element is one has to understand the parampara system, how it works. So you have the main point is that you have the spiritual master disciple. You know, so the teacher teaches the student, then the student becomes the teacher for his student, becomes like this. So one is focusing, though the parampara is there, so one is serving the spiritual master, and in this way serving the parampara. That's you know, that's just the system. But the focus is just on the spiritual master. And then who's previous to that is not so prominent necessarily, unless there is made a prominence by, you know, one's own teacher like that. Does that make sense? You know, so like, you know who to bring out, you know, who to take seriously like this, you know. So they'll talk about different personalities. So that's one manifestation. That's the general manifestation. But specifically in Kali Yuga, you know, which is a reflection anyway of how the parampara system works, is that then you have a founder acharya. And so then everybody's bringing their teachings in line with him. Right? So then Prabhupada, then he has his disciples. So that one of those disciples, the spiritual master, he is quoting Prabhupada as he's presenting it, and simply giving relevant, explanation. You know, it would be relevant to you. The instruction is relevant, but it's Prabhupada's instruction, right? Just like any parampara is, but this is specific. So now that disciple of Prabhupada, now his disciple becomes a guru, he's still quoting Prabhupada. And then 100 generations, they're quoting Prabhupada. You understand? So that's the difference in founder acharya. So you have your spiritual master who's teaching you Prabhupada's instructions. So that principle of it's just, you know, between, you know, you, spiritual master, and Krishna, that's the general sense. But when you have the founder acharya, then it's you, spiritual master, founder acharya, then Krishna. So it doesn't matter how many generations. So when we say, you know, it's gone there for 10,000 years, it means for 10,000 years, they'll be teaching how Prabhupada gave the instructions. Does that make sense?
I have a question. no problem with that. But when it comes a little further, and say you want to understand your Siddhidaya, you become very advanced, so to speak, then it's between the spiritual master and you. Right, so
Not necessarily. Why? Because point is Siddhadehu. It's like your spiritual master can reveal, Krishna can reveal, one of the eternal associates can reveal,
right.
Like that. That's not. The point is it's like this. This is the problem because we think it's gyan. You know what I'm saying? If you notice in here, the weakness in this is that there's the element of gyan, is that I have to have the knowledge for it to actually function. And there is a process that I have to follow, in other words, karma, that by doing that, I'll get my result of the Siddhadeha. Right? We all understand this? Siddhadeha means, you know, your eternal relationship and what's your natural form. You understand? So here's the karma and jnana misra in that approach. It's just like, now to give an example of why that's not a worry, is now little kids don't really have any understanding of the male-female dynamic. Right? It means they understand it's there. You tell any kid, oh, who's that? Oh, that's that person's wife or that person's husband or that person's mother or father. They never have a question on that. You know, they'll ask, you know, why are the tree, you know, leaves green or sky blue? That they'll ask. You know, because sometimes in some animal species, you know, you're colorblind. So they, you know, it's new. But mother, father, you know, husband, wife, that they'll never ask a question on because that's just standard. That's inherent, right? You understand? Now, but they don't understand the details of, you know, the intimate relation between husband and wife, right? And they won't understand it. And then one day they hit puberty, and then they understand it. Did you have to teach them? Did you have to sit down and explain to them how to become attached to a boy or a girl? No, it happens. So that's the point. You don't have to worry about it. Those who worry about it, they're covered by karma and jnana. They don't understand the process. You know? And so, it's a minor thing. If you're already on the platform of asakti, which means attachment to Krishna, then this is a minor point. But they make it into such a major point. And why do they make it into a major point? Means there are those who are, you know, innocent and just disgusting and worried and they want to get to that position. But the point is like a bunch of 8-year-olds trying to figure out, you know, how we're going to become attracted to the girls. You know, you don't have to worry, it'll happen. You know? So, that's the one thing. But more the time, you know, how it's entered really into the society is a problem. Is that there'll be jealousies because, hey, I joined when he joined, now he's the big guru and he's all this and that. Or, you know, hey, I made him a devotee, now how he's, you know, but then probably gives the point is that Vaishnava, a real Vaishnava, is happy to see someone who was junior to him surpass him spiritually. So to have a problem with, you know, hey, that's, you know, he was Bhakta Joe. You know, how is he now the big, you know, Shadhari or Nikunja, you know, all this kind of crap like this, you know. So that kind of nonsense is simply due to lack of understanding. Bhaktisiddhanta talks about that. He says, you know, the kid is small. When he's small, he runs around naked in the village. Now he's grown up, you know, he's been educated. Him? Well, he just was running around naked. Now he's become the big, you know, how do you say, Chief Justice and all this, and very influential. Him, I know, he was running around naked. You know, how long can you go on saying that? It's a real village mentality. You know, it's not sophisticated. Then you have the other aspect, so that's just, you know, misunderstanding, jealousy, you know, not understanding the principle of advancement. So, okay, that can be understood to some degree, though it's not, it's quite, how do you say, ignoble, right? Then you have the others where it's just being used as a method to get people to come over to a particular guru. Oh, they can't reveal this to you. Only our guru can. So that's the nonsense tricks of the Indian gurus. like that. You know, Western gurus don't use it so much.
Does that come from the side that guru is on the prema level and the others?
They say that, but if they're on the prema level, then the point is then they don't think they're advanced and they don't think they're a guru of devotees. That Haridas Thakur in the Harinam Chintamani says that will stop you dead in the tracks of bhava for hundreds of lifetimes. So that's not prema. So if you find that, then why would we call that, oh no, they're on prema? No, they're not. If they're on prema, there would be no distinction between the teachings. Now, someone on prema will not say that Srila Prabhupada is on a lower level of giving, you know, knowledge. Like that. And we're just being kind to even say that they're on bhava. You know, but they have to be below Purvarag, because at Purvarag all this disappears. So that means at maximum they're on some level within Smaranadasa. That's maximum. But the point is you can get stuck there for hundreds of lifetimes. So it's not just automatically to go through. The same people are saying, oh, but Prabhupada says automatic. It doesn't work automatic. It's not going to work automatic for them. So we have to know what we're dealing with here. The point is it's, because we have to understand is the concept of guru has been in India since time immemorial. So you have the bona fide, they're the best, and the bogus, they're the best. Right? No one is better at being a bogus guru than the Indian gurus. They know really how to catch your mind and all this and that. You know, just completely distract you. So they'll say, oh, you know, Prabhupada's giving you so nice at the beginning, but now we'll give you the, you know, it's like that. And, oh, wow, yeah. But what are they doing? Is it you want, you desire, you need, like this kind of a thing. They're catching that. You know, they create the inquisitiveness, that fruitive element, like that. You know, there's a process, you have to get it through them. They're the exclusive, they're the only one who gives. Prabhupada already talks about these things in his letters and purport, that this is what they'll do. And then when they do it, devotees get bewildered. But he says it right there. He's already said that this is exactly, and you hear the words that they say, no, but this, that, exactly what Prabhupada writes that they'll do. Because it's standard. You know? You know, it's like, how you say? You know, it's just like the guys have these pickup lines, you know, at the bar, you know, and they basically always work, you know, like that. So this is guru pickup lines, disciple pickup lines, you know, how these gurus pick up disciples. It's the same thing. That's why it's said. It's an offense to just have disciples to expand your, you know, either, you know, personal prestige or, you know, facility or like that. Because it goes on. You understand? So we should understand where these come from. Point is Prabhupada's the founder of Acharya. He's done what nobody else has done or can do. And those who are successful, even in the Western and world preaching, who is doing it for them? Not their own local disciples. Prabhupada's disciples. Prabhupada's trained disciples. And generally, much of the time, those trained by Prabhupada. So they don't have that potency. We're not saying they don't have, the knowledge they have is the same. There's no difference in all these different things in philosophy. But as far as understanding how to take that and preach it around the world, there's not one of them, not one, that knows how to do it and or can do it without Prabhupada. So they're doing it by doing it through Prabhupada's method, through his disciples. They don't have any of their own local people out there doing it. Not one exception. Like that. You know, one could say, oh, well, you don't know. But yeah, we've been living with them since, you know, the 70s. The people who are bewildered by them are the ones that bumped into them in the 90s and like that. But we've been living with them since that, so for over 30 years. So you know them. They won't allow each other to do this to them. You know, they won't allow. But they trick us because we don't know. So that's all. We're easy prey. Like that. Okay, is that good? Is that okay?
Ultimately, all the three categories of Sakama devotees are required to develop their knowledge of Krishna and attain the position of jnani, right? Because from karma, you'll naturally get jnana, right? Jnana and vairag.
That's why Krishna is saying in the previous chapters that it's the better position. Because jnana, you know, if you have knowledge, then you can build on it. You know, so if you have enough that it will maintain itself, you know, then that's okay. But the point is how do you get there? So it's not that you're performing karma, that just stops and then you start jnana, because where's the field? So it's much better to use the field of karma even in jnana. So when we say jnana yoga, we means it includes karma yoga. Right? So that's why Krishna goes through that step of karma yoga, then jnana yoga, and then the two combined. Right? In the fifth chapter. Right? Because he's showing the good. Because while you're cultivating knowledge, if you're also practicing activities, then that will give the knowledge and renunciation that's required for to power the jnana yoga. So you can do jnana yoga and the karma, because you're not interested in the fruit of result, you're not interested in liberation. So you're even beyond the jnana. Right? So karma yoga is beyond, jnana yoga is beyond. So then they naturally nourish each other. So that would be the best. So, but one has to come to the position to actually want to know, want to study. Right? That's what Prabhupada established these degrees. Right? But the thing is now what happened? Did they get established? Right? Satsarupa Maharaj was running Bhakti Shastri, you know, training and exams in the 70s. Right? Heard of anyone else doing it? No, until more recently. Until the 90s. So, what happened in between? Devotees are enthusiastic, doing all the services, you know, all the things are going on, but what happened? People go away. Things fall apart. Why? No knowledge. Because activity is not going to be successful without knowledge. Right? So, as you develop your activity, you have to develop your knowledge. But they're thinking, no, just develop the activity, that's good enough. No, it has this dynamic. It has to. So if you have more detachment and all this, then it has to be cultivated with the knowledge. That's what Prabhupada wanted these degrees. So they go together. It's not that, oh, well, this is a waste of time. No. Point is now, you know, it's kind of like you go and then it will peak and then just go down. Because without the knowledge, how do you keep from getting distracted? So those who are not in the temples or not in the dynamic preaching, what are they doing? What activity?
Karma,
right? So they were cultivating karma yoga, but didn't move into this element of knowledge. And so then, now they're still doing karma, but now not for Krishna because they don't have the knowledge. Yes. Yes. It's not obligatory, but the point is if you made it available, do you think that more people would get involved? Right? And the point is now there's programs going on, you know, here in Mayapur, in Vrindavan, I've heard, I think in SA, in Radhadesh, you know, I think there's something they do, a retreat or something like that in America. You know, as a regular basis. Other than that, you don't really hear of much. So that means those who are that interested, then they'll go out of their way to get to those places, or they're already in those places, they'll take advantage. But now, if every temple had this kind of program, now you're going to have many who will get involved, and there's going to be those who won't. So the point is, as long as they're fully engaged, you know, body, mind, and words, then it's fine. But those who have the inquisitiveness to know more, then if you don't give it to them, how are the words connected? You know what I'm saying? So you got the body, you know, and to some degree the mind, but if the knowledge is not there, how do you control the mind? So the problem is the activities are going great, but the mind is not being controlled by the intelligence. And so then with time, one goes away. Right? Because the activities will go on, but the mind will get distracted from Krishna into something else. You know, it's very logical, very scientific. You know what I'm saying? You know, So, you know, whether managers who have created this problem will agree with it, that's another point. But, you know, because they'll always say, oh, it's all theory, it's all, you know, the point is, hey, how practical is it, you know, what person would say, okay, we have a system here where people come into the company and we train them and we continue that training and they will stay in the company for their whole lifetime. Or we can not train them and push them and get them all emotionally involved, and after 3 years they'll go away and then we'll have to train new ones. Which would any intelligent manager choose? The second one. So then either means they're not looking at it from an actual, you know, practical way, or they don't know the importance of knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, why wouldn't it be applied? Because they say, oh, well, you have the Bhagavatam class, and some have the Gita class. But the thing is it training? That's just already your sadhana. Then in Swadhyaya, there's study. So that's hearing. Then there's study. Right? So that aspect doesn't come out. So it's not that we stop all activities and just study. It should be worked in, so it does. Like you see, like we have with the boys in the school. Half of the day is study, half of the day is service. Like that. So there's less. You know, we give the famous example, I think it was Zurich. They were always the top temple for book distribution. You know, and then they were going out from 10 in the morning till 6 o'clock, right? You know, they're Swiss, so they're like a clock, so everything's, you know, exact like that. And then Harikesh found out that they weren't studying, they weren't reading. So he said, everybody from 10 to 12 has to read the books, and then they'll go out from 12 to 6. So he took the 2 hours out of the Sankirtan time. Right? Now, what, you know, manager worried about collecting funds is going to do that? Right? Basically nobody. Right? What happened? They distributed more books because now they had more conviction because they had more knowledge. It was easier to explain. They knew more why they were doing what they were doing. They were convinced. I like reading these books. Why wouldn't everybody else? Right? So they got more in 6 hours than because they studied for 2 hours. Right? So that's probably his recommendation. Everybody studies for 2 hours a day. Does that make sense? So if you work it in, it makes everything else go. You know? Does that make sense? Just like I.
There's 2 hours. It looks the 3 hours, 9 hours.
Sorry?
There's 2 hours the proper recommended every day. It includes reading, studying, hearing.
I would say is because the hearing and the Bhagavatam, that's part of the sadhana. Like that, then there's going to be, and that's one aspect of sadhana. Then you have study. Right? Does that make sense? They're different aspects of the same thing. You know, just like, you have different preparations. You know, is rice different from dal? Yes, but they're both food. So that's the difficulty, is some people only can see food, so they can't tell the difference, right? That's how you end up with lunch being popcorn and dal or something, because they can't tell the difference of what goes with what. You know what I'm saying? Means the point is get it done, and then as the inquisitiveness comes up, then one should start studying, you know, doing more reading and stuff like that. The point is to put yourself in connection with the literatures that Prabhupada has given. So, but since you're going to do that, why not also make it into a some study that you'll also get, you know you've gone through a particular program of study and also get, accreditation for it. So that's the idea. Because then you can tell, okay, they've read this much, they understand this much, so they're on this level. Because Prabhupada even mentioned, I think, about second initiates, you know, would be Bhakti Shastri. You know, the sannyasis would be Bhakti Vaibhav, the gurus would be Bhakti Vedanta. That. So it's, you know, it'd be because that was the point. He figured by 75, devotees would have finished Bhaktivedanta and would start becoming gurus. Does that make sense?
Prabhupada confirms this in the Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 3. Without being elevated to the position of a jnani, one cannot stick to devotional service. A jnani has realized that he is spirit soul and that Krishna is the Supreme Spirit. Therefore, he makes his relationship with Krishna and not with the body. Right? So that means any devotee who is serious, there's that aspect of the jnani, but at the same time, it needs to be cultivated. Right? It means we always have to remember, it's just like, let's say you have, you know, the process from Shraddha to Prema. Okay? Now, when you first come in contact, there's Shraddha. Right? That's the first stage, is one develops that. But how did you develop that Shraddha? Just on your own, out of the blue, you opened a box of Cracker Jacks, there it was. You know, you just had to open the little plastic bag, and there was your Shraddha. You know, how did you get it? You know, how many box tops did you have to send away? You know, so it came from association of devotees, which is a higher level. But now the point is that association that you came, you chanted, you were in the kirtan, you took prasad. All right, now did you have a taste for that kirtan? Right. Or was it different? Was something you really liked it? But that's part of ruchi. You know what I'm saying? You know, and so you like going to the temple. You want to go as often as you can. Is that not attachment? Right? You know, and you've heard from them that we're not the body, we're servants of Krishna. So that is that not part of smarana, how do you say? Yeah, no, shravana dasa. That you understand your relationship with Krishna, eternal. You understand? You know, and then with time, you're not too sure about it, going to the temple, all this and that, but then you get adjusted, you know what to do, where your shoes go, and what you do, and when you bow down. So you're adjusted with it. Is that not Varna Dasa of Bhav Sadhana? You understand? So you start to think about Krishna, and you're doing this, oh, but Krishna wouldn't like that. So is that not Smarana Dasa? You understand the point? The point is that what's prominent is what you call it. So because it's this whole thing of faith in not perform, be involved in devotional service and developing that faith to be involved, therefore it's called Shraddha. Right? And then once you gain that, then you're going to want to be with others who have that same mentality, so then it's Sadhu Sangha. But Shraddha goes away? No, actually Shraddha's more because that's why you're associating with devotees. Then you're associating with the devotees, then by practicing in that, then you become more established, more stable. Right, so then you know what to do and you're determined to do that. So then it becomes Bhajana Kriya. So does that mean you give up association with devotees, and your faith goes away? No, it builds. So in other words, it builds up. So there's three. You know, in other words, Bhajana Kriya means there's three parts of Shraddha. You know, two of Sadhu Sangha and then one of that. So you understand. So that's the one that's prominent in your mind. You know what I'm saying? You know, someone who doesn't know how to ride a bicycle, then they're always thinking about it, right? And on there, and it's prominent. But once they know, it's not prominent. You know, listening to their iPod is more prominent. You know what I'm saying? Does this make sense? So you go by what's prominent in the consciousness. But it doesn't mean the other elements aren't there. All the elements are there at once. But it's just a matter of the proportion. Does this make sense? So that's why it's difficult when everything has to be put into little boxes and stuff like that, because it doesn't show the actual connection between them. Right? So yeah. So the point is that everybody has some knowledge. That's why they're there. So that's what's there. So if you cultivate that, then that will make more conviction. One will be stronger. Right? So it's like in here, we're finding the difference between, you know, what is karma and what's karma yoga. You know, to be able to tell what's the difference between karma yoga, jnana, and I say jnana yoga, and then how that's combined is bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga in this case. Does this make sense?
The pious person should thus progress from the sakam to the nishkam. Right? So definitely one has knowledge, but the prominence is the activities and the results you want to get from it. Because here we're saying the nishkam is also the jigyasu. Because they just want to know for themselves. They're interested, so they want to know. Like that. So it's nice. It's, you know, that's great. But the point is where does Krishna come in? That you're actually doing it to please him. That's the jnani. Because he knows, I'm servant of Krishna. So it says here, jnani has realized that he is spirit soul, that Krishna is the supreme spirit. Therefore he makes his relationship with Krishna, not with the body. He has realized that you know. That's the beginning, that he's realized. So that's what defines the jnani. So he's on nishkam. Right? Because otherwise you know, but you're still, you know, you know I'm serving to Krishna, and Krishna's God, you should go to him, but then you still want all facility from him, or your miseries to go away, or... Does that make sense? The pious person should thus progress from the sakam to the nishkam level, and then make further advancement towards complete surrender to the Lord. In verses 17 to 19, it is explained that of the four types of pious people mentioned above, the one who has realized his constitutional position as eternal servant of Krishna and is always engaged in pure devotional service to him is the best. Krishna is very dear to him, and he is very dear to Krishna, because such a devotee has only one purpose, to serve Krishna with love and devotion, while the other three pious persons want something in return for their service. The jnani has unmotivated and exclusive devotion to Krishna, eka bhaktir, because his consciousness has been brought under control by the practice of jnana. He can fix his attention to the Lord. He is therefore nitya yukta, always engaged in pure devotional service. Krishna considers such a devotee just like his own self. So in the note, still the Kevala Bhakta, the pure unalloyed devotee described in verse 1, Maya Shakta Manaparta, is considered by the Lord to be dearer than his very self. The Lord confirms this in Srimad Bhagavatam 11:14-15. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Shankarshan, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self, are as dear to me as you are. Right? So in other words, then... there's going to be that connection that he is dear, but then there's the one who's more dear, you know, than oneself, you know. Does that make sense? So it's, you know, it's like in you have Dwarka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. So Dwarka is perfect, but Mathura is more perfect, and Vrindavan is most perfect. So there is variety still within perfection. So within the pure devotional service, there's still the difference between, you know, pure and pure unalloyed, right? And even within pure, then you have levels. So pure devotional service is there, the madhyama, but then there's higher than that's the pure devotional service of the Baba Bhakta. But then, you know, then there's the topmost is the pure unalloyed devotional service of the Prema Bhakta. Right? You understand? So that's all pure devotee. That's also for your... you know, your other question is pure devotional service starts from madhyama. Yeah, but the problem is they'll say, you know, you have to surrender to a nitya siddha, someone who's free from all material modes, who's, you know, situated in pure devotional service. They haven't understood. They think they're talking about one person, but they just describe three levels. Because nitya siddha then means prema. Because until you get to there, it's not nitya siddha. Right? Liberated is bhava. Free from material contentment is bhava. You know? Like that. Know who they are, the spirit, that's bhava. Like that. And then pure devotee, that's anywhere from madhyam, nishta above. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So this, the difficulty is that devotees don't even know the terms. So that's why it's saying their approach to these things is sentimental. There's something else is mixed there. So the actual knowledge is not there. So they miss the point. Okay. The Lord is so affectionate towards his devotees that he considers the jnani as his own self, atma atmaiva, rejecting all relationships as inherently material, and thus being entirely ignorant of the science of rasa,
The Mayavadis misunderstand this exchange of love between the Lord and his devotee and take Atmaiva to confirm their theory of monism. Right? They understand oneness is in mood. Right? You know, it's always said, you know, Radha and Krishna, they'll make the point of that one soul and two bodies. So the two bodies are always there. The forms are always there. Otherwise, if it's there, what's the meaning of, you know, your feeling one with yourself? You know, does that give you some, you know, special satisfaction? You know, no, because that you know, it's when two people have one mentality. That's what has the is the flavor. You understand? So we can take part in that. So Radha and Krishna have that one mentality. So we can assist in that. You know what I'm saying? So that expands that. Right? That position, principle of Krishna is expanding the creation for expanding rasa. Right? And at the same time, our position as assistants, as servants, as instruments. So then that works. Because they can't see that you can have two and have a common like ground. They wrongly conclude that the devotee and the Lord are identical in all respects. This erroneous idea is repeatedly refuted by the Vaishnava Acharyas, as Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan comments. One cannot propose that in this verse the Lord says that he is non-different from the jiva, who has become a jnani, because he is not the goal of worship for such a jnani. Because this is not the goal of worship for such a jnani. As well, there are no statements showing his result for any of the four types of worshippers. As well, there are contrary statements made elsewhere of the difference between the jiva and the Lord, even in the stage of liberation. The jnani is called my atma only because of my extreme affection for him. This is similar to saying out of affection, Padrasena is my very self. Others say that Atma means mind in this verse. In that case, the sentence would mean, my mind thinks of him constantly. Is that clear? Right. In his Tatparya Chandrika, Sri Vedanta Deshika also states that there cannot be separate identity between the Lord and the Jnani. This Chandrika aspect looks interesting. The statement of identity should be understood as an expression of an intense love felt by the Lord for his devotee. The Lord says, whatever the Vedanta may hold, it is my settled conviction that the man of wisdom is my very self. Right? Because the Vedanta is the knowledge, but someone who has that knowledge and practices that, then that's more dear. Right? Because the knowledge is important, but there's someone who can do it. It's just like you have this fabulous first-class kitchen. That's great. You know, but the person who can go in there and cook something in that kitchen, then that's more dear. Right? You may love your pot, you know, your Jamie Oliver, you know, Teflon pot, you know, but ultimately it's the person who can use it that's more important. Does that make sense? Only the pure-hearted devotees can understand the Lord's dealings with other devotees. The Mayavadis are bereft of knowledge of the confidential loving exchanges between the Lord and his devotees because they do not follow in the disciplic section of the Lord's devotees. Therefore, their explanation of this verse cannot be accepted. Because we've already established in the beginning, in the introduction, that unless the spirit is correct, you can't understand. God is beyond, so knowledge, he's beyond knowledge. So how by knowledge you'll know the Lord? But the point is knowledge is a medium to know the Lord. So if you approach the Lord through the proper knowledge, right, and therefore that gives proper activity, right, because knowledge should be applied. So when that proper knowledge is properly applied, and the purpose of it is to please the Lord, to know the Lord, that then is what pleases the Lord. Right? Because it's not just, you know, everyone sitting around in telepathy or something, or that everyone's going to end up as, you know, how you say, just a brain sitting in a jar somewhere, you know. I mean, it's very popular. But the point is it's interaction that's important. Like that. Although the Jnani is the best among the pious persons described in verse 16, the other three categories are also appreciated by Krishna. Right? It means Srila Prabhupada explains in his purport to verse 18. It is not that devotees who are less complete in knowledge are not dear to the Lord. This is a very big chapter. It's the biggest, yeah. This is about, you know, devotion to the Lord. I'm impressed. It just keeps, I was thinking, wow, we're going through so many pages, and then it just keeps going through so many. Wow, 20 pages. I'm impressed. No, don't worry, it's good. It's good. It is not that devotees who are less complete in knowledge are not dear to the Lord. The Lord says that all are magnanimous because anyone who comes to the Lord for any purpose is called a Mahatma, or great soul. This is important. Anyone there is Mahatma. You know, even gurus, you know, like that. You know, so, you know, all Mahatmas, so every devotee is. That's why Vaishnava Parad is so, one that has to be very careful about it. You know what I'm saying? So, because all are dear. In other words, all living entities are dear to Krishna. But the point is that because they're not interacting with him, he can't manifest that. So yes, they're neutral, he remains neutral. Even if they're against, he still remains neutral. Right? But they're his. Right? But as soon as they recognize the Lord and try to come towards the Lord, then they become Mahatmas, the special. So the specialness is that they come to the Lord. Now within Mahatmas, of course, you're going to have gradation. But we always take the top is real and everything else is nonsense. You know, it's 100% or nothing. But where does 100% or nothing come from? Where do you have this element that 100% is important? Yeah, yeah, material world is complete. You don't have 100%, you don't have it. And if you only cook the potato 80%, you don't have a cooked potato. Right? So only when it's 100% do you have anything. So anything less than that is not there. So we take this element of karma, you know, and apply that on the spiritual. Right? You know, it's the same, you know, Mayavad mistake. That's why we have to have this knowledge. No. If it's connected to Krishna, then it's already perfect. Now it's just its gradation of perfection. So that means everybody who surrendered to Krishna, like that, whatever capacity, you know, you can say, oh, well, surrender means this, you know, complete this, that. No, we always meet these really dogmatic, really heavy, you know, get out there and burn them at the stake kind of statements, you know. But the point is here, he's saying artha, artarthi, and jigyasu. You know, somebody's just approaching Krishna for facility or to get rid of his anxiety. Right? They're Mahatmas. You know, but then point is the Mahatmas should associate with Mahatmas who are more Mahatma than themselves, like that. Yes. Yes.
There are statements, like for example, by Srila Prabhupada, that even if you are 70% Krishna conscious, you are going to spiritual world. But I don't exactly understand how can you be then in spiritual world if you still have 30% for material desire.
We'll say it very succinctly because we've discussed this in the past. If you catch it, great. If you don't, then you'll just have to, as we go, put things together. Point is the difficulty becomes because of our definition of what the spiritual world is. You know what I'm saying? The spiritual world is where Krishna and his internal potency are interacting. You know what I'm saying? That's the spiritual world. Now, you have, and then the external, you know, the Bahiranga Shakti. So Antaranga we understand, and Bahiranga we understand. What we don't understand is Tatasta, you know, which is a problem, because that's what we're from. So that's, I guess, the problem of self-realization, you know, it's a difficulty, you know, like that, because it's either, you know, we're material energy, so as materialists we're doing that quite well, or as impersonalists, then we're God. So we work out these things quite well, right? But the difficulty is that the spiritual world, where the spiritual world and the material world are at the same place at the same time, that's the Tathasta Shakti.
Does that make sense? So the point is where do you? So you have to start from that point. That's the point of neutrality. To either move from there into the material or into the spiritual. Right? But the platform is spiritual. There is only spiritual. But spiritual can become covered. Right? The internal potency won't, because they don't have that tendency, but the jivas can, because they're so small. So they can be, their spiritual can be covered. It doesn't go away. Right? So the point is where the Lord has his pastimes, or what we would call Gokul. So at the same time, Gokul can also refer to, you know, go. So making here and using Goloka, meaning, you know, in the Tripada Bhuti, you know, where Goloka Vrindavan, the planet, is, and its expansion into this material world as Gokula. But that Gokula is the power of the Tathasta Shakti that holds the material energy and the spiritual in the same place. Right? Because the residents of Vrindavan are in spiritual bodies doing spiritual activities, and the demons are coming into Vrindavan in material bodies and doing material activities. Does that make sense? So the point is when one goes from here, one goes to Gokula. But that's the stage of bhava. So bhava happens in Gokul. So when you're in your sarup, that's where you're in your sarup. Right? And so therefore, all those different things where you haven't developed that love and attraction for Krishna, that can be dealt with there. So that's why one practices. When one comes to prema, then one goes to Goloka. So Prabhupada explains that in the purports. As they say, everybody goes from here, next birth is Gokula, and then from Gokula you go to Golok. Though there are those that are advanced enough that through meditation they're already coming to the platform of prema in Gokula. But through meditation, they're still in their you know, present body, but through meditation they're in the pastimes. That's where Raghunath Das says, he offers his respectful obeisances to all the residents of Vrindavan, those who are there in their form and those who are there by meditation. Right? That's the opening to Manasiksha. Right? So that's where that 30% is taken care of. You understand? So that's why, yeah, devotee's been doing all this and that, but then, and he's been right out there and really out there, and then, you know, he gets AIDS and figures out, you know, that's it. He's got 2 weeks to live, so he comes back to the temple, you know, like that, starts chanting and everything. And then, they're there, and, some other devotee is, you know, kind of keeping watch and all that. And they've been in a, you know, whatever, they go into a coma and that. And then suddenly they sit up and say, oh, Prabhupada, you came. And then they fall over dead. So that's what it means. You understand? So that's the point, is if you're focused, you remember Krishna, you go to Krishna. It doesn't matter what else is there, because the point is Krishna is what's important, not what they did. Because what they did, what does that matter? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's if we're understanding that what's not connected to Krishna is illusion, since when does illusion have substance? So therefore, but if you remember Krishna, that's substance. So that's real. Everything else is unreal. So it doesn't matter what happened. But the point is if you're going to remember Krishna, that takes practice. So if you haven't practiced it, there's a good chance you're not going to remember. So the Hindu concept, you know, grow up now, get yourself situated, enjoy yourself, have your family life, you know, your money, everything like this. And at the end of the life, we'll worry about spiritual life. But, you know, what if you don't? Because you haven't practiced. So the point is, from the beginning, you start Krishna consciousness. Then there's every chance you're going to remember Krishna. Does that make sense? That's the, okay. The devotees who want some benefit out of devotional service are accepted by the Lord because there's an exchange of affection. Out of affection, they ask the Lord for some material benefit. And when they get it, they become so satisfied that they also advance in devotional service. So they get it, but at the same time, they start to lose that desire. Right? Because it's connected to the Lord. That's the point, is it's connected to the Lord. So the reason that we talk about it's not good is simply because of the element that's not connected to the Lord. Does that make sense? So, you know, the potato has a peel. That's not so good. You can't digest it. You know, it may have so many vitamins and minerals in it, but that's not for you. That's for a cow. Like that. They got the stomach that can digest it. So, but does that mean the potato's not good? So you keep the potato, get rid of the potato peel. Right? So the whole point is that in approaching the Lord for these things, the approaching the Lord, the going to the Lord, interacting with the Lord, that's the good part. That you want some material results, that's the part that's not so important. But now, which is greater, the Lord or the material result? Right? The Lord. It means He's everything. Material world is only one quarter. You know, and the part that we're kind of trying to control is, you could say, with, yeah, a little bit less than one quarter of the cosmic creation, like that. No, we may think it's a little bit bigger, you know. It's a, what is it? We are the world, you know, like that. So, you know, that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So one has to appreciate, this is actually seeing the glass is half full. Because you're seeing what's there. So the half empty part is because of the material desire that's there. But if you focus on that, the glass full is Krishna, then you cultivate that part of it. You know, Krishna, and then the other part will go away. Just like if you concentrate on the glass half full and keep the filling process, then the emptiness goes away. Does that make sense? So it's not sentimental. Right? It's just, you know, it's the fact. You know, but of course, all facts you can be imbued with sentiment. So as long as that sentiment is connected to Krishna, it's great. If it's not, it's nice, but still a bit useless. Nice useless. What was that? Pleasant, useless. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse. Arjuna asks, then what means the other three are, Arjuna asks, then that means the other three are not dear to you? Right, because he said the Jnani is the most dear. So then Arjuna asks, so does that mean the other three aren't? You know, like that. You know, it's like, you know, lunch has been cooked and that. Oh, this sabji is so nice. You know, like that. Does that mean you don't like the other one? You know, so it's the same. Krishna replies, no, they are all dear to me. No, they're all good. Okay. They worship me while accepting objects which have been desired. That means which they have desired. And which I want to give them anyway. They are very dear to me because I am affectionate to all devotees and like to give them generously. But the Jnani is my very self. He worships me and does not desire anything at all from me, neither swarga nor moksha. Thus I am dependent on him. He is my soul. Right? Because then Krishna can relate on his platform. Because the other one is, you're taken care of it on your platform. Right? Otherwise, why is friendship considered greater than servitorship? Yeah, it goes. Sorry. Yeah, so there's an interaction there because the other one is going one way, but not so much back. You know what I'm saying? And then why is conjugal higher than parental?
Surrender.
The same principle. Right? In other words, the parents taking care of the child. It's all what the child wants, the parent takes care of. And so there's a nice interaction. You know, but it doesn't have the same depth as the conjugal. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the friendship and the servitorship then are not as intimate. Right? You know, while the conjugal and the parental are intimate. But you can see as the one where the interaction is going both ways is higher than the one who's going in one direction. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is in these others, it's nice, it's an interaction. But then there's the one where it's equal. Does that make sense? So and that's why Shanta is, you appreciate and they appreciate and that's it. There's no dynamic interaction. God appreciates the Shanta Bhakti appreciates God, and so, but that's where it ends. So at least in servitorship, there's something dynamic, something's going on. Right? So does that make sense? Yes.
I don't understand what it means when Krishna says here, objects which I wanted to give them anyway.
Objects he wanted to give. Means he wanted to already give the Mercedes Benz, so they didn't actually have to ask for it. Like that. But because they're asking, then it's in connection with the Lord.
Why does he want to give it?
Why do you think? I mean, it could have been a Maserati. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so why did God pick the Mercedes? That would be definitely a source of, you know, how I say, research.
My doubt is that before the devotee asks for it, why would Krishna want to give it to them anyway?
What are they going to ask within?
Within.
What are the areas that someone asks within? Yeah, the areas of interest, their nature. So, and then what is the process that we see of karma yoga?
Acting according to your nature.
Yes. So taking your nature, engaging. So the facilities for that engagement, you know, of nature, then are what would be naturally the things that you would use to interact with Krishna. So Krishna would already like to give those, but the point is. He wants to give them, but only if it will enhance your devotion. Because otherwise, if he gives them and then you'll be distracted, why would he give? You know what I'm saying? You know, in other words, you know, the father is a, you know, how you say, you know, expert, you know, sharpshooter and all that. You know, he's won so many awards and this and that. He's really into all his guns and all that. So he would like his son to also become, right? But he's not going to give him a gun. You know, if he's going to use it to, you know, shoot the dog and, you know, knock off, you know, the plates in the kitchen and, you know, shoot his friends or, you know, like that. So he's only when he's going to be responsible with it. You understand? So if by Krishna would like to give it because it expands the field of activities in which the devotee could interact with Krishna. But if by giving it one will become distracted and go away, then why give it? You know what I'm saying? So he'd like to, but you can't. You know, just like the parent would like to give so many things, but he can't. You know? Does that make sense? You know? The father. The son is born, you know, he wants to give him the family business. But he has to wait until he's mature enough to actually get it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay. Still haven't resolved about the Mercedes. Oh, it's probably because everybody else has one. That's the point. Yeah, okay.
Does the name Mercedes have some relation to mercy?
Maybe. I mean, we could definitely take it into this area like that, but then we might end up, you know, kind of like in the cultural dysfunctional position of nerds. So, you know, it might not be worthwhile. Where you say you go after, you follow. What is it? Pursue. Yeah, to pursue such a, you know, definition like that. After many births and deaths, such pious persons realizes that in everything there is a relationship with the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. Knowing Sri Krishna to be the cause of all causes, he surrenders unto him in full Krishna consciousness. Such surrendered great soul is very rare. Verse 19. Right? Okay, so in other words, you see, because the jnani means is based on this knowledge of understanding your position and Krishna's position. So then you see here is these two level things. It means in everything there's a relationship to Krishna, and he is, so that means this connection, he is the cause of it, so the interaction, right? And then it brings to the point of full surrender. Right? Do we see the three stages there? It means many pious person realizes that in everything there's a relationship with the Supreme Lord. So that's the part of Brahman understanding. Right? knowing Krishna to be the cause of all causes, right? That's the Paramatma understanding, right? And he surrenders it to him in full Krishna consciousness. Then you're getting the Bhagavan. Srila Prabhupada summarizes the progress of the jnani as follows. You have something? No. The living entity, while executing devotional service or transcendental rituals, after many, many births, may actually become situated in transcendental pure knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. Right? So, you're performing devotional activities. But at some point you realize that the goal of that activity is Krishna. You understand? You're taking your bath and doing this, but actually it's Krishna. You're taking your bath for Krishna. Right? You know, some, you know, good friend comes and this and that, and you want to been out in the field. You go, you take your bath, you know, you make yourself presentable. It's because of the person. Not just, oh, here's the ritual, guest has come, so I have to take a bath. Okay, that's, at least you do it. You know, so it's good, and the person will appreciate. But there is the stage that you're doing it just for them. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what Prabhupada said, transcendental rituals. So it's the activity is transcendental. In the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. Right? Because you're trying to give up the one, so you have to pull yourself out of that. So the tendency is to go into the impersonal. Because you don't want to get involved, because you haven't connected yourself to Krishna, which is the personal. Right? It says tendency, so because they're not impersonalists. Like I said before, the jnani is not interested in liberation. So that's not his point. It doesn't mean he doesn't want to be freed from material distress and the problems of the material world. Like that, because of the mode of goodness. But the point is, he's not interested in liberation. So he's not actually, jnani in the sense of the impersonalist. But when one is further advanced, he can understand that there are activities in the spiritual life, and that these activities constitute devotional service. So it's not that I'm doing this sadhana to get myself out of the material world. This sadhana is actually things that please Krishna as a person. He likes these things. He does these things. He gets up in the morning. He takes a bath, right? You know, he does service to the cows and the Brahmins, and you know, he takes his lunch, his meal with his, you know, friends and family, and interacts. And so one's doing all these things, right? You take prasad in the association of Vaishnava because that's how Krishna likes to do it. Like, think of it: when Krishna sits down and takes prasad, who is he taking prasad with? Devotees, the Vaishnavas. So then, therefore, that's the principle. You sit down and take prasad with the Vaishnavas. That's what Krishna likes to do. Right? The realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to him. At such a time, one can understand that Lord Krishna's mercy is everything, and he is the cause of all causes, and that this material manifestation is not independent from him. So now you're seeing all these other things back from there. So it's, then you see how Krishna has entered in all activities, all different things, the potencies, the attractiveness, it's all Krishna. But before, it's intellectually, you know, it's God and all this, but now that attachment to Krishna, now you see it the other way. So that's how it's said, that the pure devotee sees Krishna in everything. Right? Because it's gone the other way now. Does that make sense? So, in other words, before it was knowledge, now it's realization. At such time, okay. He realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness, and realizes that in everything there's a relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. In other words, what's here is reflected from there. So that means it has a connection to Krishna, because everything there is connected to Krishna. So everything here that you see, there's some connection. So then you can take that and you don't get distracted by these other things. Why someone can't say, oh, but you know, that's so terrible. But the point is it's that rasa that's Krishna. You know, that's coming from there. It may be that, but it's manifest here because the living entity is one. It has a medium, but it's been perverted. You know? So it doesn't have that problem because we're not attached to the mundane concepts, you know, good and bad. You understand? Because that's why it's, oh, that's, you know, that, you know, how could that be? You know. Does that make sense?
Thus he thinks of everything in relation to Vasudeva or Sri Krishna. Right, so Vasudeva would be, is transcendental, it's above, you know, so you see the spiritual aspect, you know, or Krishna, you know, directly as the person, you know, that, that more, you know what I'm saying, it could be a little bit more intellectual, a little bit more, more, you know, just personal. Such a universal vision of Vasudeva precipitates one full, precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord. Sri Krishna is the highest goal. In other words, you see how Krishna is in everything, then that will be just before seeing, you know, Krishna. Does that make sense? Because you know it's Krishna is in everything, but you're seeing that through that element of knowledge. Then you surrender to him. Then it goes back the other way. Right? And then that makes it, brings it more that you see that, so then it takes it further. You know, it's like ripples on a lake. They go to one side and come back to the other and come back. Such surrendered souls, great souls, are very rare. Bhagavad Gita 7:19. You can see in here, this is also be something for yourself, is that this element of these subtleties are in here. Well, we've read this purport and these kind of purports so many times, but have we understood the levels of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan? And how we're going from that seeing in here and going up till we actually have more realization of how Krishna is a person. That comes down and then nourishes the Paramatma Brahman aspect, which then that precipitates one's actual surrender to Krishna. Right? Have we been seeing this? If you have, great. But if you haven't, then we can understand when people say Prabhupada's only giving the basis, that's just pure unalloyed nonsense. Like that. It means they don't know what they're talking about. And that's being nice. And so we'll leave it at that and won't say that they have other material, you know, how you say, agendas, that that's why they're saying this. But the point is they don't understand what's seen, because one has to know that there's subtleties. Like, I mean, I remember when I was 12, we were walking, I think through Disneyland. And it was, you know, I was the only kid there. And it was my parents and all their friends, you know, so they're all adults, you know. So, you know, up to that time, you know, they're always laughing and joking and talking and all that. And, but I wouldn't pay any attention to, you know, their jokes like that until, you know, we're walking along. And then I, you know, because I guess, you know, 12, I understood their joke, you know. So then I, you know, made a comment, you know, regarding that, that I understood, and then, you know, all the adults cracked up. Because they'll be talking about all these very intimate aspects, but in language that doesn't appear to be. So, you know, they've been, you know, talking for years, all this kind of stuff, but I'd never noticed it, right? But then I did notice it, right? So that's the point, is that all these words Prabhupada's using, they have further meanings. So they, in other words, they'll mean something to us on our level. But as one advances, one sees more and more and more. Right? So that's the point, is it's like a kalpavriksha tree, it's unlimited. So the only one to say, well, Prabhupada's giving the basis and they'll give further, that's just nonsense. They just don't understand the process. You know, or they're misrepresenting it for some other purpose. So it can't be, these things can't be tolerated like that. Yes?
So would that be the reason why Prabhupada says that his purport is actually more important than the verses?
Are his purports more important than the verse? Yes, like that, because then you understand what the verse means. Otherwise, see, because you have the Veda, but then how you understand the Veda, that makes your philosophy. So there's six, you know, general understandings of the Veda. So you get those different mimamsas. That's how they interpret it. So Prabhupada's purport is our hermeneutics to understand what Krishna is saying. Right? So then through that we will understand what is being given by the acharyas headed by Rupa Goswami. Then you'll see what Rupa Goswami sees. Because if you don't follow that line, who knows what you're going to see. Like that. And if someone says, no, but we're all the same line, great. But then there is the point is who picked you up out of the gutter? Do you want to be standing next to them, or do you want to be standing next to someone else who, you know, came along a little later? You know what I'm saying? Who do you owe your life to? You know? Does that make sense? We have no problem that somebody has directly been picked up by that person. Great. But people have been picked up by Prabhupada, and then they take claim that we don't have anything good to say. And then, nice, it's they're connected, they're involved, that's great. But the problem is where are they going to be? That's the point. It's very specific. When you get to that level, they talk, oh, it's very specific here, and you got to be like this, but when you get to that level, then it's all one. It's not all one there. You're with those persons that you're performing service with and are dear to. That's the group, because that has the group dynamic. You know what I'm saying? So that's it. And it's not, we're in Braj. We're not in these, you know, other aspects of Vrindavan where there's 10 million maidservants, right? That is plenty. It doesn't matter. It's like, you know, us and every other, you know, variety of follower of Lord Chaitanya can fit into that. But in Braj, the groups are small. So the intimacy is greater. You know, like that. So, therefore, there's 5,000 to 6,000 maidservants. That's it. In one pastime. So, that starts to limit numbers. So, you just decide who do you want to be standing next to. It's that simple. So, it's very personal. So, and then they say, no, but we're all, you know, we're all in the same group. No, we're not. Don't kid yourself, we're not. Like that. Yes?
Some devotees also mentioned that, for example, Jiva's Goswami is Rama. It's so specific that when you try to translate it, it's hard. So, through the purpose of Prabhupada, he can understand the mood of every child, and then
yeah.
Gives us in a language that we would.
Yeah, that's the point, is that he's speaking these very, very, you know, lofty truths, but in simple language. But because he's willing to use the simple language, then the tendency is those who are expert will say that it's, you know, that, you know, they'll go, in other words, as you become more expert, you kind of like increase your vocabulary and method of speaking, right? But that's the expert, but then the master, he's master because he can present that technical point that the expert knows but can't explain to someone who is not also potentially expert. Right? In other words, you can, let's say you took an expert in let's say, you know, some particular science, very technical thing. And then you told that expert, can you explain this to, you know, this classroom of first graders? They wouldn't be able to do it. Because they have to use their terms, they have to use this and that, and the reason that they're attached to it. That's what makes them an expert. But the master could do it easily. Because they know what the essence is, and they know what language they speak, and they would present it in things that they would understand. So that's what I think it was called. I think that's what the meaning of Shrotriya. I think that's it. I have to look it up. There's one word in Manu that they give. Is that person who can take very technical or elevated points and present them very clearly, simply, that's Shrotriya. That's what you want. Right? So that's the qualification of a spiritual master. Not that he knows what you're, you know, what you are in the spiritual realm or not. Because even if he does, what does it matter to you? What can you do with it? Nothing. So it's not important. Does that make sense?
Is that the same meaning like gyan and vigyan?
Gyan and vigyan. Yeah, you could say. Gyan and vigyan. But I'm saying there's always, as we say, there's always some level of vigyan. Otherwise someone's not expert unless there's some element of vigyan, because there is a there is a change in the lifestyle, it becomes important to them. So anything that's a change in the lifestyle becomes part of the lifestyle. That means it's vigyan. Right? But the point is only that aspect has. It hasn't, like the essence hasn't become, because they don't know. They've missed that. So that's the thing. So there is a difference in, even within the level of mastery, like that, you know, of what's there. So it's not just in the subject matter, it's in the depth of understanding of the subject matter. So the Vedas put more on, it means you do make the distinction between material knowledge and the transcendental knowledge. So that's there. So a teacher of transcendental knowledge is higher than a teacher of material knowledge. But within teacher of transcendental knowledge, then you have one who's realized and one who's not. You know, so that also is defined. So in the modern education, they just make distinctions between subject matter. But what's to define what's higher and lower, that they can't say. You know. Is that okay? So in here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janitai Gaurapriya.